This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby.
If you enjoy football, hootball,
be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys. New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday.
Subscribe on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN.com's Bill Barnwell wrote about Myles Garrett today. Here's what he had to say. He goes through all the teams, one by one. He's weeding them out why they don't make sense. He lands on a category that he calls the sweet spot. These are the three teams that make the most sense. And then he gets to the Commanders, third of the three in the sweet spot, and he says, I saved the best candidate for last. The Commanders are the most obvious and consequential landing spot for Myles Garrett. They have the championship potential, financial flexibility, and clear and obvious need for pass rushing help. Disagree with one thing there. You can't. They have championship potential, even though it seems a little bit lofty to say that. They just played in the NFC title game.
Yes, they did.
Financial flexibility goes without saying. They have the third most cap space. Clear and obvious needed pass rusher? Check. He goes on to say, all of this starts with Jaden Daniels. The rookie sensation is still on a bargain deal for three more years before the Commanders would even have to consider a fifth-year option. They will likely give Daniels a new deal in 2027 if he continues along this path. But that would still give them a huge runway where his cash and cap hits are team-friendly figures. They have $80 million in cap space in 2025, so while they'll look to add help at receiver and potentially on the left side of the offensive line, general manager Adam Peters and company will have plenty of resources to devote to the defense. That's the thing too, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
As many needs as they have, and I think they're going to have plenty of them because a lot of these guys on the one-year deals are going to walk and they've got to rebuild this thing a little bit, so to speak. As far as major splash areas, tackle, corner, wideout, edge. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You got draft picks. If you hit on a couple of them, there's two of the four, ideally. You're talking about two money additions, and then using some duct tape and figuring some things out like you did last offseason at a lot of other spots. To read the next paragraph here, Dan Quinn was able to coax better-than-expected play out of the defense in his first season as Commanders coach. You agree with that?
Yes.
I do, too.
Yeah, I do.
He said some of those moves were short-term additions. Dante Fowler led the team in sacks with 10.5, one-year deal, $3.3 million. He mentions that he's 30, and you can't count on him to do that or pay him to keep doing that moving forward, probably. Then he gets Dorrance Armstrong. He says followed Quinn to Washington as well, more of a rotational player than a lead pass rusher. I think that's probably fair, although I will say I thought Armstrong played way better in the stretch than he did in the beginning of the year.
I thought he was unheralded. I thought he was very solid, but you know, probably didn't get the credit maybe he deserves. We talk about this all the time, but some of those ancillary statistics where the sack totals weren't gaudy, the quarterback hit totals weren't gaudy, but caused a chain reaction that led to the play. Or
yep.
He beat his guy. You could see it. He flashed enough times where you go, oh, there's Dorrance Armstrong. He had a couple really nice moments, obviously, where maybe he was starting to get home a little bit more. But I think he was solid, if unspectacular.
I think the assessment that he's probably like a good second end or a one of three that you've got that you like is probably true.
Yeah, that's my view. Yeah,
being a lead pass rusher, you're probably not an elite defense. But I think he grew a lot as the year went on, and I think he ended up being really, really good for them in the stretch run. The Commanders probably feel good about the middle of their line with Allen and Payne and promotions coming from second-rounder Johnny Newton. He says they're going to be in the market for edge rusher help more so than tackle help. But this was the point that was interesting, and I want to get your thoughts. He says, Garrett would be the transformative player Quinn's defenses have usually needed to thrive. Now, I would say you could say that about most defenses. But he points out with Quinn, when his defenses have been at their best and ranked in the top 10, It has required superstars to make things work. He cites Bobby Wagner, Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman in Seattle, Micah Parsons in Dallas. Miles Garrett would give Quinn a chess piece who makes everybody else on the defense a little scarier, which could be hugely valuable for a team that's going to need to draft a lot of defensive help over the next few years. What do you think about that?
I think that's very well. It's better said than what I've been trying to say. In other words, like, imagine Frankie Louv was a really good player, right? Very good. You know, I don't criticize guys for being very good, right? But imagine Frankie Louv was turned up to 11 in a superstar version, where every play he lines up somewhere different. That would be Micah Parsons, right? And you could see what that looks like when the rest of the defense that may or may not be that good, all of a sudden you got a guy leading the league in picks because Micah Parsons is wreaking havoc. Because he lines up over the tackle one play, off the edge the next play, looks like he's dropping into coverage the play after that, but he ends up blitzing, so he's singled up on a running back and knocks him into next week before hitting the quarterback. Like, that level of stardom where, at a minimum, the offense must say, we can't do certain things because that guy's there, right? We have to check to something else. You are limiting what they can do, and then even still, there are going to be times it's 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. You let that guy run free. Right, you let him wreak his havoc. You find the weakest spot on the line and say, rush against that guy. You know what I mean? So, yes, that's quite – I mean, as you said, any defense is going to get better with great players. Duh, that's obvious. But I think Dan Quinn specifically, I think there's a great case to be made here where you look at Hall of Famer in his prime that covers for everybody else or lets everyone else be free and unlocks them. I think there's something to that.
Well, I also don't know that you can really find Super Bowl teams that often that don't have one player on defense that is a DPOY type. Like, they exist for sure, but it's every several years. Like, I don't know that the Bucks, the year that they won it with their great offense, had one guy on that defense. They had good players. Vita Vea's awesome up front. Levante David in the linebacking core. That was before Devin White fell off. They had a pretty good secondary, if I remember as well. But Chris Jones is a mainstay with the Chiefs, who's a defensive player of the year candidate year in and year out. Aaron Donald with the Rams going back a few years ago. Philadelphia with Jalen Carter and the way Zach Bond played this year at linebacker. Like, he played at a Bobby Wagner level. You know, that was a superstar season. I think more often than not, you go all the way back to Super Bowl 53 in New England. Now, you can find on these teams, there's always that one guy that you have to account for, that you have to game plan for, you have to coordinate against. And Washington has not had one in so long that it would just be such a breath of fresh air. I wouldn't even know what to do with myself if we're watching a defensive wrecking force that every single drive, if the opponent doesn't make sure that they don't beat them, is going to end that drive. That's what Miles Garrett is. I always go back to the videos where teams have gotten delay of games because he keeps switching sides of the field like a receiver in motion.
Mm-hmm.
And the two tight ends have to motion to be in front of him because that's who's helping block him. You've seen those, right?
Yes, so good.
And he'll just go to one side, go to the other side, go to one side, and they're following him. And then there's 3 seconds on the clock, and all of a sudden they have to burn a timeout or take a delay of game. Final paragraph here in the write-up on why the Commanders are the best fit for Garrett. Barnwell says, Washington is the 29th pick in April. That would likely be in play as part of a Garrett deal. Would they be willing to throw Allen into the mix? The 30-year-old defensive tackle is in the final year of his deal. Newton seems ready to move into a starting role next to Payne. The Browns have Dalvin Tomlinson on the interior, but Allen would give them a second impact tackle, soften the blow of losing Garrett. Washington could also get a third team involved as a potential landing spot for Allen. Either way, if the Browns are actually willing to deal Miles Garrett, the Commanders should be the first team they call. Here's the thing is, I would love if you could package one of your D tackles, and it would probably be Allen because there's only 1 year left on his deal, and cushion some of the blow of the picks. If it's 2 ones in John Allen instead of another draft pick or something, or a 1, a 2 in John Allen or something. Now, do I think that's realistic? Probably not, but he cites it here. And respectfully to Allen, who I've liked for a long, long time, I mean, there's
right.
I think they're ready to move on from one of those two guys anyway. Paying both of them for what they've gotten the last couple years doesn't make sense to me at this point. Borderline unsustainable. I think Newton could give you comparable production. Allen's better than Payne at this juncture, but Payne makes enough money that I think it's hard to move.
Yeah, a little bit more prohibitive there. Toby and I talked about this while you were out, Cheeps. You're getting close to $50 million in salary cap now between those two guys this next season. And if you were getting the production that got those guys signed, a.k.a. Daron Payne's breakout year, and I thought that was the start of something, I was wrong, and you got Allen at the peak of his powers, you'd go, yeah, that makes sense, we'll pay that. But you're not. And again, it's unfair to a degree, but when you sign that kind of a mega deal, sorry, the expectations go up and they've not been met. So there's no way around that. And to me, if you could move on from one and keep the other, if money was equal, and hear me out, I would move Payne and keep Allen just because I think the cultural impact and how much of a leader he is, when it's like Saturday night before the game, he's one of the guys giving the speech. He's one of the leaders. What he did to come back from injury, I thought was pretty heroic. I'm a fan of his, and he's a bit more productive in the moment. But I understand you got to give up something that you like to get something great, right? You've got to pay a tax here if you'd like Myles Garrett to come to town.